Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're going to talk about what an art museum is and does today. We'll talk about the Nora Ackles Harrison Museum of Art, founded in 1982, which emphasizes 20th and 21st century American art with an emphasis on art in the American West. We'll talk about the current exhibits at the museum, along with programs such as virtual tours, K-12 education programs, community art days, summer camps, sculpture walk, and more. And our guest is Nora Ackles Harrison Museum of Art Director and Chief Curator, Katie Lee Coven. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
So I want to start with what an art museum is and does. I guess maybe that has changed over time, along with perceptions, right? And I'll play a little devil's advocate here. I could see in some minds an art museum is maybe like the opera. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I love the opera. But you know, maybe talk about relevance, right?
Yeah.
You sent me an article, here at New York Times talking about specifically art museums on college campuses. Mm-hmm. And I'll quote from this article. This is the director of Michigan State University's art museum. Each institution has different reasons for renovating, expanding. It comes down to relevancy. So, how does an art museum stay relevant?
Great question. You know, artists are always are products of their time and place. And I think museums are and should be a product of their time and place. And what I mean by that is that while we might be exhibiting works that are maybe we're exhibiting artists concurrently that are living, or that have been deceased for some time. Maybe that object is from 100 years ago. But when we think about how we present it, how we share it, how we preserve it, we have to think about how do we do that today? And that's going to be different than how that may have been done 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So we're always thinking about our role in society today. Museums are still, the data shows, one of the most trusted institutions in society, which is, I think, says a lot about museums, especially in this day and age where there is, you know, a really enormous amount of distrust with information and different institutions.
What do patrons say these days? What are they looking for when they come to an art museum, yeah, or participate in a lot of these programs?
Sure. They're looking for different things. It depends on the person. You know, we just participated in a national survey and surveyed over 100 of our visitors, and they range in age and likely socioeconomic status, though we weren't, you know, asking that question. And so they're looking for different things. That survey told us that some are looking for an opportunity to a space in their community to go with friends, something for enjoyment. I mean, fundamentally, what museums are is a space for learning, experiential learning, informal learning, formal learning. We try to accomplish a lot for really trying to serve the widest possible audience and their needs, and we want to meet them where they are. For me, I'm always thinking about not only whether it is a college student coming to Logan that, like myself, I grew up in a small rural town and we didn't have a museum where I lived. And that threshold, crossing that threshold into a museum or gallery for the first time, can be really intimidating for some. And how do we and what can we do to remove that barrier and make it inviting and let them know that this is theirs, this is their museum, and the way that we even provide educational and interpretive materials around the art. We are thinking about our audience constantly in everything we do to ensure that whether you are a fourth grader coming in as part of a field trip, or a seasoned museum visitor visiting from Manhattan, you know, that you will walk away with having had an experience that not only provides enrichment intellectually, but also emotionally and socially. And that's something that museums are doing a lot more, is thinking about the emotional and social roles that we have in our communities.
Well, I'd like to address that immediately. So removing barriers, right? And I can see, first time, right? Art museum, I don't know, right? How do you remove that barrier?
Well, marketing is the first thing that comes to my mind. How do you develop? What are we sharing? Again, meeting our visitors where they are. If you're a college student, you may have come across something on Instagram for us, right? So we have college students creating content, and so that we are meeting them where they are in that regard. But I think some of it is, a lot of it is not trust on a national level, like I was talking about before, in that perception of what museums are, but on a local level. I mean, you really, it's taken me, one of my, you know, goals is to become not a hidden gem, as people once called us, but a really embedded part of our community that people know and feel really comfortable coming to. And that also means that we have to get out into the community. We, as staff of the museum, I myself am very engaged in the community, but also on an individual level, but professionally, how do we have a mobile art truck. We get it out there, right, to help that as well. So those are, I think, some of the ways.
What about, this article talks about art museums on college campuses, mm-hmm. right, and highlights several that are expanding or have expanded, including USU. You made it in the article. Recent expansion, right?
And the current one that's underway right now.
Current expansion.
Yes.
Current expansion. But that could, I imagine, be an extra layer of complication, maybe an extra barrier, right? People from the community, maybe I'm uncomfortable coming up to campus. The art museum is not in my community. It's on the campus, right? And then also, who are you serving, right? Are you supposed to serve the campus community or the broader community?
Great questions. Funny enough, but not surprising, that in terms of community, the perception is parking is the biggest issue. Mm-hmm. So we have free parking spaces dedicated to museum visitors, and most university museums have dedicated parking to remove that barrier. But there's still that perception, right?
Yeah.
You know, parking is kind of a nightmare mm-hmm. on a college campus.
I would add, for anything you want to host at the university, that's probably the community's perception,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Parking is going to be a problem, which sometimes it is, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, what was the other part of your question?
Who do you serve? You serve in the campus community or the broader community?
So, fortunately for the Nora Eccles Harrison Museum of Art, being part of Utah State University, we are at a land-grant institution. And that means that what we do aligns very well and perfectly, I think, with the mission of Utah State University. We want to provide access to education. And that means a lot of different things. And so we serve every age group locally. We have programming for toddlers, our Mini Makers program, up to creative aging, which is for senior citizens and everyone in between. It is a challenge as a director to prioritize and balance, you know, our resources while trying to serve so many different audiences. But it's exciting to me, and it's very rewarding to me, and it's rewarding to my staff. So it's important, but we are a lean staff, and we do a lot. We serve over 17,000 kids annually now, which is pretty incredible, I think, for where we are. And I'm very proud of that. But we're also serving, I think this year we met with over 80 different USU classes. I mean, meaning they came and met with a staff and had a conversation relevant to their course in the museum, not just, you know, they came on their own time and we checked a box that that class came. So, so there's a lot of intentionality around how diverse and how much we can spread ourselves to serve every demographic and component of our community, and not just our local community. Since we have our mobile art truck, we can take things to rural areas of Utah as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you go around the state?
We do.
Yeah.
The mobile art truck prioritizes really our K-12 program, and it has a miniature version of an exhibition that we have on view in the museum inside of it. And it usually goes out for a couple of weeks at a time and to places that do not have museums, really small communities. And we have, through some grant funding that we receive, we have a requirement to serve every school district in the state of Utah over a 3-year rotation through the professional outreach programs and schools funding support through the Department of Education. And so the mobile art truck helps us accomplish that. But the thing to also understand is that we are looking at core standards of curriculum at every grade level and ensuring that we are meeting not just what the visual arts core standard is maybe for second grade, but likely we're also meeting some sort of science or math core standards as well, and really try to scaffold those so that the teachers and the schools get a lot out of what we have to offer to them.
Tell me what happens. The art truck pulls up, a small town. Do the kids file through the truck? Do you take the art out into the class? What happens?
So this is probably a better question for Shannon and my educators who are doing this work. I'm in awe of their ability to do this. I will say that when we go with the mobile art truck, what often happens is the entire school wants every grade level to come and participate. And so it usually is starting in the classroom, having a discussion, and then coming out to the truck, having a conversation. We have some seating in there as well, and can really, I mean, they're in there pretty tight, but you can get a class in there, a whole class.
Yeah. That's amazing. I've been in the truck. That's amazing. Of course, these are smaller human beings, right?
That is true. Yeah. Yes. And then they will go back into their class and do a project, an arts project that maybe is combining ideas of fractions or chemistry. I mean, it really spans widely. I just want our listeners to know that we're really interested in unique and elevated art experiences for our kids that are also tying into what they're learning. It's very intentional, the kind of programming and educational resources that we offer.
Yeah. Tell me about Community Art Days. And this happens, is it monthly or almost monthly? And I understand during the summer you go to the gardener's market.
That's right. I'm so glad you mentioned this, because this Saturday we kick off our summer Community Art Days at the gardener's markets. And we know that, you know, during the winter months on a weekend, you might be looking for something to do indoors. If you're not out, you know, skiing or snowshoeing. But in the summer, it's beautiful, you know, and people want to be outside. And so we've been doing this for a few years now, where instead of having the Community Art Day at the museum, we have it at the gardener's market with our mobile art truck. And so it's there, you know, 10 to 1:30 or longer. And you can stop by. And I know that this weekend, I don't know what the art project is. I don't recall, but I know it's in conjunction with the Bird Migratory Day. That's sort of a theme with the art making project this Saturday.
Yeah. I know there's a sculpture walk here on the USU campus. with an audio tour. So can I do that on my phone? Can I?
You can
pull up the art museum website and.
You can, yeah. If you go to our visit page, there's a sculpture walk link, and you don't. I mean, you can stop by and get a map at the museum, or the University Inn usually has them, but you don't have to stop by the museum to get that. The map is on there, and. Each sculpture around campus, we have labels that are numbered and a QR code along with basic information about the artists and the name of the artwork. So if you scan that QR code, so you just open up your camera and scan that, it'll take you to the audio tour. You can also read the script that is being read. And a fun little bit of information about that. When we developed that tour, we collaborated with the theater department on campus and hired them and paid them to read those for us because we thought that would be a kind of fun opportunity for them. So it's I think, a little more lively and diverse in terms of who you're hearing and what you're hearing as you go through.
That is fun. Now, do you have summer camps? Do you?
We do, yeah. So this is the second year or third year that we've been doing summer camps, and they've been a great success. This year's theme is experiment. And so it will be experimentation in the arts and sciences. And we have, there's team building and art making and outdoor activities. And they are for ages 6 to 12. And there's two camps. They go 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., and they're both in the month of July, the week of July 8th and the week of July 29th. And I believe there's still some slots open for those. So we have a lot of return campers who really love it. So that, I think, says that we're doing something right there.
Yeah. Hopefully we're giving families and teachers some good ideas here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're emphasizing this idea of relevancy, right?
Yeah.
We're talking with Katie Lee Coven, who is director and chief curator of the Nora Eccles Harrison Museum of Art on the USU campus in Logan. We're talking about what an art museum in our day and age does and should be doing. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get into talking about some current exhibits. We'll talk about virtual tours, which I understand is you're closed in May, right? So that's your option if you want to see these. But with the technology, you can get a really good experience with the virtual tours. We'll talk about that following this break. Thanks for listening to Access U Time. Tom Williams. My guest for the hour is Katie Lee Coven, who is a director and chief curator at the Nora Eccles Harrison Museum of Art at Utah State University. We're talking about what an art museum these days does. A lot of outreach we've been talking about, a lot of K through 12. So Katie Lee Coven, I've been sort of thinking about my K through 12 days, which are decades in the rearview mirror here. But, we didn't have the art museum come out. We didn't have, I know the opera company here in town sends out people to take you through and they have the kids write their own little opera, right? And it's a fun, you know, so a lot of options these days. I guess all we had was the Dinosaur Museum. This was out in Bernal.
Right.
That nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah. And I bet there are people that come from far and wide to
visit the dinosaur museum. Actually. I always tell people, if you grow up in Vernal, you're the only kids who get tired of dinosaurs.
Right.
This is the only ones. Anyway, I digress. I wanted to talk a little bit about your background. What you said you no art museum in your town growing up? Yeah.
No, there wasn't. I grew up in a small town in South Carolina, Lugoff, South Carolina, and it's about 30 minutes east of Columbia, so the capital, and there are museums there. But where I grew up, we did not have a museum. It was a really small town, rural area, but my parents were very supportive of my interest in the arts, and there were outlets and opportunities, but I really was not introduced to museums until I was in college and really thinking about them. I mean, I had visited, you know, Washington, D.C. and gone to some of the Smithsonian museums when I was in school. I think that was in maybe the 7th or 8th grade. And, you know, I had had exposure to visiting museums selectively, but not on a regular basis. They weren't part of our daily community environment, if you will. So, yeah, I mean, it was really learning about art history, that learning that you could learn about history through art, that began my journey and into museums, and not even knowing it was going to be museums per se, but really just interested in how art can help us learn so much about history. So really, it made history interesting for me.
So art history degree, is that what you did?
That's correct.
What were you going to do with that? Was it always, you're going to curate and direct an art museum?
I had no idea. Unfortunately, my parents were, they said, follow what you're passionate about. And what, and I still tell students this today that I meet. I think that if something really lights you up, and keeps your curiosity, and it's something that you want to work towards, that you'll figure it out. And so it was really by chance. I was taking studio art classes and theater classes. So I should also say, because I think sometimes people think, oh, you know, like artsy fartsy, what is, you know, I grew up playing sports year round too. So a very athletic family. my brother's a college baseball coach. I loved playing sports, but I also loved art. So I just want to mention that because I, for some reason, I think sometimes in our world, they seem like two ends of a spectrum. And I actually think about the commonalities between the two. Like artists and athletes, they both are very passionate. They have a talent that is sometimes pretty extraordinary, you know, and unique. And they have to have drive and commitment. And it just manifests its way in different ways. But I was taking studio art classes and theater. I knew I wanted to do something in the arts, but I wasn't sure. And funny enough, I took an arts management class, and I went for like the first class, and I was not at all interested in that. So a bit ironic that I am now an arts administrator in addition to a curator. But art history classes, I had to take as part of my studio art requirement, and I just fell in love with it. And so I got my undergraduate degree at the College of Charleston. And I knew that in order to do anything with that degree, I probably should get at least a master's degree. And so I then went to England and got my master's degree at Richmond American International University in London, studying art history as well.
And here you are. We're glad you're here. I want to talk about virtual tours. Did this come out of the pandemic? This predated it. I know during the pandemic, it was an absolute necessity. If people were going to interact at the museum, they had to take the virtual tours, which are, the technology is pretty spectacular. You can get a pretty good experience with a virtual tour here.
You can. So I encourage anyone listening, if you haven't visited the museum, or if you're not in Logan, or even if you're in Logan and you want to preview what we have on view before you commit to coming, you know, that's a great way to take advantage of this this software and this feature as well. But it was actually the pandemic that drove us to prioritize it. It was something I had always wanted to do because I'm thinking about accessibility for viewers and even as a museum, archivally, I love that after we take an exhibit down, we can go to our virtual tours are still there, and it's a record. Mm-hmm. that we didn't have before, right, other than through photographs or if we did a video. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason that we internally really appreciate and enjoy having these. But it was during the pandemic. In fact, it's a funny story. I was, my family, we were selling our house in Logan to move to another house in Logan. And the realtor, Ken here, was our realtor, and he's a friend. And he said, oh, we're going to come by and do this virtual tour thing. And so he sent his person out to do that. And then he sent me the link, and I was just blown away by how cool it was. And I said, and it wasn't the first time I had seen one of those, but it was the first time I thought about those being, that software being utilized for a museum.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, would you talk to Jet Youngblood for the realty company and see if maybe they're willing to be a sponsor for this exhibit and let us use your equipment and staff to come and do a virtual tour. Right. And so and Jet said yes. And it was a great way for us to pilot it and see how it worked. And during COVID, it was very timely and helpful. And so we did that for about a year, maybe, I think, with them. And then we bought the software and the camera necessary to do it today. And the thing, if you haven't experienced it before, I just will attempt to describe it to listeners. When you click on it, it takes you into almost a maquette. You know, you sort of fly into the room, if you will, and there are little circles on the floor, and you click on those circles, and that's how you move, almost like on Google Maps. If you, you know, click on the map and it moves you forward, it's the same idea. But we also, on our walls, there are little different colored bubbles, and they have information. So a text label for that object. Sometimes it's audio, interviews, or other related links about that artist or artwork. So there's a lot of content there if you haven't, and if something sort of piques your interest as you're walking through online the virtual exhibition.
Yeah. That's interesting. Technology developed for real estate.
Right. Yes.
It makes me wonder what other connections are out there. We'll probably find them if we go looking, right?
Well, and I think a lot of museums are actually using the software now. Mm-hmm. So it's become one of the softwares being used for virtual tours in museums today.
Yeah.
But it wasn't before COVID.
Right.
I think we were one of the earlier ones to utilize it for this context.
Yeah. Yeah. Trailblazer. So you could go and follow along as we talk about some exhibits here. What's the best way to get to the Art Museum website?
If you can type in USU Art Museum, our name is a little long, Nora Eccles Harrison Museum of Art. So we use NEHMA, NEHMA. If you just put NEHMA, USU. So any of those will land you on our website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the current exhibits. You have at least three up at this point?
We do, yeah. So we have women's work, new additions to the NEHMA collection, and Jane Catlin, a retrospective. Those two exhibitions are on view until July 20th. So, again, we are closed during the month of May. Part of that is the university has some maintenance on their steam lines and HVAC systems, so we can't control temperature and humidity for a little while. And so it can get rather cold in there. So that's part of the reason we always close in May. So women's work, new additions to the NEHMA collection, that was curated by Danielle Stewart. She's she's a curator and head of academic initiatives working with our university faculty and students. And these are all works by women artists that we've added to the collection over the past 5 years. And it was a way to highlight some of our new additions to the collection, but in a thematic way that we thought would be of interest to our audiences. You know, a lot of museums are really trying to, we've been looking critically at our collection through lenses of gender and even material and genre, and thinking about, as we collect, what gaps do we still need to fill? And women are still by far minorities in museum collections, art museums collections. I think we're around 35%, which is actually better than a lot in terms of representation of artists by gender in our collection. And but there's still work to do. So that's what this exhibit is about. It's there are some themes that she's pulled together, and it's a really fun show, very diverse, and a lot of just, yeah, variety.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the paintings here. Very some of the very striking. Tell me about another collection you have up right now.
Yeah, so another exhibit is, I mentioned this one, so I'll just follow up on it. Jane Catlin, a retrospective. So Jane is a former faculty professor in painting and drawing here at Utah State, and retired a few years ago. And so we worked with Jane. We wanted to celebrate her career here and her artistic career. She's shown nationally and internationally, and her work is just, it's beautiful, but it is also, what I really like about Jane's work is you can engage with it as any, I think, successful art. If a child comes and views the work, what they will get out of it can be quite different than an adult. And she makes these, her work is both paintings on linen and on mylar, which is an opaque, waxy kind of paper, as well. And she paints these semi-abstract biological forms. And so upon first glance, you may see something familiar, but it seems abstract. And then upon closer inspection, you might see, you know, there's a beehive, and then there's a piece. One I love in particular is about sarin gas, and she was really interested in how it travels in the air. Hmm. But you would have no idea that that's what it almost looks like, a beautiful waterfall that you're looking at abstractly. But then you learn it's actually about something that's quite serious, environmentally and ecologically.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah.
So her exhibit is up through July 20th as well. And then the third exhibition is Perception and Abstraction, the Terry and David Peake collection. So David and Terry Peake are both professors here at Utah State University. David's a physics professor. Terry is a professor of social work. But they have been avid collectors of art for many years. And they have gifted some work to the museum over the years. This exhibit is mostly promise gifts. So they plan to gift part of their collection to the museum. And so we wanted to share that. And so that's the other exhibit. And they've collected a lot in the Southwest area. And so that's an area that they're sort of filling a gap in our collection. We certainly have some artists in our collection who are in the Southwest. But so that's really the strength and interest and where they're helping us with the collection.
Yeah. So most of these exhibits come from your collection, right?
That's right.
A lot of pieces in storage. You bring it out around a theme usually, right?
Right. So, yeah, there's usually, to be honest, it's usually a combination of collection-based exhibitions and exhibits where we, and an exhibit that we borrow work from. And that's nice to bring in something that we've never shown before. So, yeah, it's usually a combination.
Yeah. I'll just prep you after a break here. I want to have you maybe select a couple of favorite past exhibits. And as you mentioned, with the virtual tours, those are all now up on the website.
That's right.
You can. There wouldn't be space to have every last exhibit you ever done at the museum, right, itself, physical museum. But people can go to the website, scroll down through several past years, and then bring up all these exhibits and take a virtual tour, right, which is a great opportunity. And then future plans after break. We're talking with Katie Lee Coven, who is the director and chief curator at the Nora Eccles Harrison Museum of Art on the USU campus. We'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about art museums, and one in particular, the Nora Eccles Harrison Museum of Art at Utah State University. We're talking with the museum's director and chief curator, Katie Lee Coven. So Katie Lee Coven, I wanted to have you, you know, pick out a couple of favorites. Maybe hard for you as the director, but we mentioned before the break that this was not possible before, I guess, COVID, and before we developed the virtual tours. An exhibit came and went. Lived in memory, I suppose, right? But now you can go to the website here for the Art Museum, and there's a tab called Past Exhibitions. You can just take virtual tours of all of those. Are there any that stand out?
There's a lot that stand out, so this was a little difficult of a question. I'll start with a solo artist exhibition and then talk about two thematic exhibitions. One that it was one of the most fun exhibits, and I absolutely love her work. It was in 2021, Jean Lau, Your Place in the Multiverse. And her work really centers around a lot of different societal topics, pop culture, environmentalism, politics, art history. But the thing is, she uses satire and humor in a way that's just so clever that it makes you giggle. Most of the, so if you were to go into the virtual tour, you would come into a space that looks like you're in a Walmart almost. In the first gallery, there's some stacks of Karo syrup and powdered sugar and some strange wall. You're not really sure what you're looking at, but she's taken tin foil and created faux windows. So this space, you're encountering what. This is very familiar. I feel like I'm in a shopping space, but yet I'm in an art museum. And then upon closer examination, you know, the shelf that looks like, you know, maybe Karo syrup or hair color, they're all paper mache individually made objects. Mm-hmm. So that idea of mass production and consumption sort of turned on its head, and thinking about individual making and the antithesis of that, right? So so there's a lot more that I could say about that exhibit, but I just, that one, another, I will just mention part of this exhibit that if you visited it, that you would remember, is there was a piano in the middle of one of the galleries, and the top was open, and spilling out of this piano was chips, like Cheetos, and, you know, just little bags of chips, and you could literally take one. Mm-hmm. We would ask that you wait and eat it once you got out of the gallery. But the piano, the rug it sat on, the plant beside the piano were all paper mache. I mean, the piano, to be structurally sound, had wood. I think she stripped down a piano and then built it back up with paper mache. but
it was just a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But there's so many layers in that exhibit for mm-hmm. different audiences that had fun with it. So that's one that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, that was a striking exhibit for sure.
And then the two others I would mention, I it would be remiss of me not to say Collecting on the Edge was an exhibit we did in 2018, and it highlighted a little over 170 artists from our collection. Really, that exhibit and the Unearthed exhibit, which we just closed, which was about our ceramics collection and Nora, the woman behind it, both of those exhibits, Unearthed featured almost 300 pieces from our ceramics collection. So they were both very large-scale exhibitions where we were looking at our aspects of our collection as a whole, but we were wanting to tell new stories and highlight artists who maybe otherwise hadn't been known, some who are incredibly well-known, and thinking about how we tell new stories, expand our thinking about what art in the American West was and what it is today. And both of those exhibits try to do that, but in with very different artworks.
Yeah. One that stood out to me was just last year, Facing Fire.
Absolutely.
Such striking images of actual wildfires and then the aftermath of wildfires. A lot to say, right, about, the subtitle, Art, Wildfire, and the End of Nature in the New West.
Yes. So that was a traveling exhibit that we hosted from University of California, Riverside, and their Museum of Photography. Douglas McCullough was the curator of that show, and I was so excited when I learned that exhibit would be traveling. We reserved that exhibit, it may have even been during COVID, and it was a number of years before it made its way to Logan on the exhibition schedule. But it is so relevant, to where we live. Mm-hmm. I knew that it would also, I think about how can we bring in audience, community members who may not be interested in art generally, but they may be interested in art that is about a topic that resonates with them.
Yeah.
And fire is certainly one that all of us can relate to in the West. You know, when August comes around, we are wondering if, we wake up and we can see the mountains, or if there will be smoke here that's come all the way from California or Nevada, and, might it be sitting here for a few weeks? Is there a fire up in the canyon? I mean, it's very part of our lives here. And so, but the way the variety of artists and how they are interpreting and thinking about fire and their personal experiences with it, I think what was really the strength of that exhibit.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very striking. We just have a couple minutes left. I want to have you maybe just mention briefly upcoming exhibits.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity to do that, because it's always exciting to, as we're thinking about what's next. So opening this summer, one is San Francisco, The Golden Years, 1930-60, and that's drawn from our collection and really highlighting this moment in art history in the Bay Area that doesn't get a lot of playtime and larger sort of narratives around art history and artists. There were some incredible artists who were very influential, Adeline Kent, Jay DeFeo, Ralph Stackpole, Sergeant Johnson. It will bring forth sort of a new way of a new part of our history that we don't really know much about. Michael Duncan and Bolton Colburn are the curators for that exhibit. Bolton is on staff at the museum as a curator of collections and exhibitions, and Michael is an independent art historian and critic we've worked with a couple of times before. So that's coming up, as well as Los Angeles Hard Edge and June Harwood. Those are upstairs. But I want to just kind of jump to one that I think is worth noting and describing a little bit. It doesn't open until August, late August, but it's called Art de Paño, Chicano Prisoner Kerchief Art. And we have the curator for this exhibit is Alvaro Ibarra. He's a art history faculty here on campus, and he discovered that we have four of these paños, handkerchiefs created by incarcerated Hispanic men or women, mostly in the Southwest. It's a very, it's a longstanding tradition that many people don't know about. And it's something that we have a few pieces in our collection, and we're borrowing some from a collector and a museum in Albuquerque. And we're highlighting, I think it's 50 or so of these paños. First time this type of exhibit has really been brought together. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. If you go to the website, you can see at least one of these, a picture of one of these. Well, we've reached the end of our time. We've been talking with Kaylee Lee Coven, who's director and chief curator at the Nora Eccles Harrison Museum of Art on the USU campus. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. And just a reminder to listeners that everything we do is free and open to the public. So if you want to stop in, there's no admission fee.
You can go to the museum, or you can take the virtual tours as well.
That's right.
And a lot of outreach activities are happening as well, including the Gardener's Market here in Logan.